like to turn the conference over to Penny Duckham. Please go ahead.
Hello and welcome to today's web briefing, which, as you know, is exclusively for journalists to give you the chance to ask questions as we look ahead to the second open enrollment this Saturday, November the 15th. I'm Penny Duckham and I'm the Executive Director of the Kaiser Foundation's Media Fellowships Program, and this is the latest in a series for journalists to give you the chance to ask detailed questions. I've got colleagues here in Washington, D.C. who've been crunching numbers and data, so a lot of this is very timely. It's also very heavy on numbers and data, so we will be starting, as we have previously, with short presentations, but really the bulk of this briefing is intended for you to ask all those questions that you hope that we can answer. So with that, I am here with my colleagues, Jennifer Talbot, the Kaiser Foundation State Health Policy Director, and Karen Politz, Senior Fellow, and Cynthia Cox, Senior Policy Analyst. And we will start with these brief presentations. If you can send in your questions by chat as from now, we will be working through as many of them as we possibly can as soon as the presentations are over. Jen, over to you.
Great. Thanks, Penny. So as Penny said, this webinar will focus on what to expect from the second open enrollment period, which begins this Saturday on November 15th. Just as a reminder, open enrollment is the only time during the year when people can sign up for non-group coverage. Outside of the open enrollment period, you must have a qualifying event to enroll in or change health plans. And this is true both inside and outside of the marketplaces. But as we look ahead to the start of the second open enrollment period, I wanted to take a quick look back at the first open enrollment period. So last year, the open enrollment period lasted for 6 months from October 1st through March 31st of October 1st, 2013 through March 31st, 2014. There were early website issues both at healthcare.gov and across many state websites which hindered enrollment initially. As a result, enrollment was slow to ramp up, but as these issues were resolved and as the outreach efforts began to take hold, enrollment increased. By the end of the open enrollment period, over 8 million people had signed up for qualified health plan coverage. And just to note, 28% of those individuals who signed up for coverage were in the coveted 18 to 34 age group, and 85% were eligible for subsidies. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, as of October, there were 7.1 million people who were enrolled, still enrolled in coverage and paying premiums. Importantly, most people, as you can see from this slide, most people waited to the end of the open enrollment period to sign up for coverage. Almost half of those signups took place in the final weeks. And as we'll discuss, and particularly as Karen will discuss, consumers have a good reason not to wait to the last minute during this second open enrollment period. And I just want to quickly note that although we're focusing on the marketplaces, it's also worth noting that enrollment in Medicaid has also increased as a result of the Medicaid expansion. As of August 2014, CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, reported that Medicaid enrollment had increased by 8.7 million since October 2013. So state marketplace and Medicaid expansion decisions will remain much the same in 2015 with a few notable exceptions. Three state-based marketplaces, New Mexico, Nevada, and Oregon, will use healthcare.gov in 2015, while Idaho, which had used healthcare.gov in 2014, will move to a fully state-run website. And then on the Medicaid side, only Pennsylvania will be newly implementing the Medicaid expansion, with enrollment set to begin on January 1st, 2015. And it's worth noting that states can choose to expand Medicaid at any time, and we will continue to monitor state decisions. Under the ACA, there will be some other changes that will affect consumers in the marketplace. The required premium contribution amounts for those receiving subsidies are increasing slightly. However, consumers will still be eligible for premium tax credits if they have income between 100 and 400% of the federal poverty level and meet other requirements. They will simply have to pay a little bit more for their coverage in 2015. Now, not shown on this slide, but also important, the federal poverty measure changes each year. This year, the poverty level income for a single person was $11,490. For next year, that measure increases to $11,670. That means subsidies will increase slightly for people if their income remains the same from 2014 to 2015. Another key change is that the maximum out-of-pocket limit on cost sharing will increase in 2015 to $6,600 per person and $13,200 for a family. However, the limit for those eligible for cost sharing reductions, those are people with incomes between 100 and 250% of the federal poverty level, will remain the same in 2015. And just to note, the out-of-pocket limit caps the total amount of deductibles, copays, and coinsurance that consumers can be required to pay in a year for in-network services. Once the out-of-pocket limit is reached, the health plan must pay 100% of the covered health care costs for the rest of the year. And then, importantly, the penalty for not having health insurance will also be increasing in 2015. So one of the more important questions for the second open enrollment period is what is happening to premiums. Based on our preliminary analysis of premium data, overall, premiums for the second lowest cost silver plans are holding steady across the country. The second lowest cost silver plan is key because this is the premium on which the tax credits are based. In fact, on average, when we look across the largest cities in the 49 states for which premium data were available, those premiums for the benchmark silver plan declined by 0.2% from 2014 to 2015. Of course, this overall decline masks variations across states. Premiums are increasing in some states and declining in others. Now, some of these changes are being driven by insurers leaving or entering the markets or insurers adjusting their prices to reflect the experience of the first year. So as I mentioned earlier, the majority of enrollees in the marketplace are receiving subsidies to lower the cost of their coverage. So I thought it would be helpful to quickly review how tax credits work. Premium tax credits are only available for people who enroll in marketplace plans. If you sign up for coverage outside of the marketplace, you are not eligible for these subsidies. The formula for determining an individual's premium tax credit amount starts with the premium for the second lowest cost silver plan available in the marketplace. In this example, if the individual is 40 years old and living in Denver, the unsubsidized premium for the second lowest cost silver plan this year is $3,000 or $250 per month. From that amount, the formula subtracts the required contribution for that person based on their income, and those were the percentages I showed on the earlier slide. In this example, the 40-year-old Denver resident earns $30,000 per year or 261% of the federal poverty level. Therefore, the required contribution is 8.37% of income, which works out to $2,512 a year or $209 per month. So the tax credit for this person in Denver is equal to the unsubsidized benchmark premium, $250 per month, minus the required contribution of $209 per month or $41 per month. Now, once this tax credit amount has been determined, individuals can apply that tax credit to any plan in the marketplace except catastrophic plans. So, as we show on this slide, the lowest cost bronze plan is offered at $186 per month. Using the $41 tax credit, the individual in this example would pay $145 for this bronze plan. Now, because the tax credit formula caps what a person has to pay for the second lowest cost silver plan to a percentage of income, an increase in the cost of this benchmark plan won't be felt by many consumers. Our analysis here shows the effect of those tax credits on the benchmark premiums. In this case, we held income constant at $30,000. Because the federal poverty measure is increasing for 2015, people whose income remains the same will pay a lower percentage of their income toward coverage. As a result, premiums with tax credits will be slightly lower in 2015. However, there are some very low-cost markets where the benchmark plan costs less than the $209 monthly premium that consumers of this age and income would have to pay under the tax credit formula. In those marketplaces, consumers can expect wider swings in the cost of the benchmark plan premium because they are not shielded by the cap. So, for example, in Minneapolis, in 2015, the benchmark premium plan or the benchmark plan will increase from $145 to $183 per month. But because that $183 is still less than the required premium contribution, the individual in Minneapolis will have to pay the full amount. Now, to be protected from increases in premiums, those eligible for tax credits must enroll in the benchmark silver plan. Importantly, the benchmark plan in a given area in 2015 may not be the same as the benchmark plan in 2014. Consumers, particularly those renewing coverage, need to understand these changes. So to describe the renewal process and other issues, I will now turn things over to Karen.
Thanks, Jen. So a new activity for this second open enrollment period will be renewal of coverage. Everyone who has a marketplace plan now and who wants to stay covered under a marketplace plan as of January 1st must either renew their plan coverage or pick a new plan during open enrollment. People may not realize this, particularly if they bought their marketplace plan mid-year after a qualifying event. Before the ACA, non-group plans typically renewed on the anniversary date of first purchase. But now the market is moving to plan years that are based on the calendar year. So everyone who is in a marketplace plan now should have already received or will receive by tomorrow a notice from their health plan explaining that their coverage under that plan will end on December 31st. The notice will indicate whether the insurer will offer that same plan again in 2015, and if so, what it will cost and what changes might be taking place under the plan, for example, the higher out-of-pocket limit on cost sharing that Jen mentioned. The notice will remind consumers that open enrollment begins this Saturday, November 15th, and that this is the time when consumers can decide whether to keep what they have or shop for new coverage. The notice will also inform consumers that if they don't act affirmatively to renew coverage by December 15th, they'll automatically be renewed in the plan they're in for January 1st in most cases. Automatic renewal of coverage is the default option. Consumers, though, are encouraged to shop around. New marketplace plans will be offered in 2015. On average, 1 to 2 new insurance companies will be participating in the marketplaces in 2015, and some states more. New Hampshire, where only one insurer offered marketplace coverage this year, for example, will have 4 insurers offering coverage in 2015. There'll be 5 new issuers in Ohio, 6 in Pennsylvania, and then in some marketplaces, insurance companies will be leaving. So plan offerings may change, and premiums are also changing, as Jen just described. This is a new system, and it's still evolving in many areas, and it probably won't be at steady state for a few more years. So it's a good idea for consumers to check in, see what's being offered and what it costs, and make an active decision about whether to keep their current plan or change. If consumers don't affirmatively act by December 15th in almost every state, they will be automatically renewed in their current coverage for January 1st, 2015. There are a few exceptions. If their plan is no longer being offered, but their insurance company is continuing to offer other plans in the marketplace, consumers who don't act in the first month will be automatically enrolled in a similar plan that their insurance company offers. If the insurance company is leaving the non-group market altogether, then the person won't be auto-renewed and their coverage will end on January 1st if they haven't acted. The notices that consumers get in the mail this week will explain the auto-enrollment and whether any of these special situations apply to them. And then in a few state marketplaces, Oregon and Massachusetts, there won't be auto-renewal at all because of changes that these states are making to their marketplace websites. Consumers should be aware that if they are auto-enrolled in a plan because they didn't act by December 15th, they still have the rest of open enrollment to make a change. So if somebody wakes up on New Year's Day and decides to change plans, they still can. If they pick a plan by the 15th of January, their new coverage will start on February 1st, and if they wait later than that, their new coverage will start March 1st. Consumers who are receiving advanced premium tax credits in 2014, or the APTC, also must renew this subsidy during open enrollment. The premium tax credits also apply based on a calendar year. And remember, as Jen told you, 85% of consumers in the marketplace plans this year are receiving premium tax credits. As we just discussed, the amount of premium tax credit a person is eligible for is likely to change next year, at least by a little bit. Certainly based on things that consumers can recognize, if nothing else, everyone had a birthday and they're a year older, so their premiums and their tax credits will change a little bit because of that. The federal poverty level is being adjusted, but other things can also change that consumers might not recognize or anticipate. In particular, the cost of the second lowest cost silver plan in an area might change, and that could significantly affect the amount of premium tax credit that people are eligible for in 2015. So consumers are strongly advised during open enrollment to go back to the marketplace and update their application for financial assistance. In federal marketplace states, consumers can log on to healthcare.gov and they'll see screens that have been pre-populated with the information they entered last time. When they update that and hit submit, within a few seconds, they'll receive a new premium tax credit determination for 2015, and that'll reflect all the changes that they just entered, as well as other changes they might not be aware of, like changes in the cost of the benchmark plan. In federal marketplace states, once consumers get that new premium tax credit determination, they have to take one more step and select a plan. Even if people want to keep the same plan for next year, they must reselect that plan on the marketplace website in order to apply the new tax credit amount to their plan for 2015. If consumers don't update their application by December 15th, in federal marketplace states, they will automatically have the amount of their 2014 premium tax credit continued for 2015. And in most cases, that amount will be a little bit wrong, too high or too low. There are some exceptions to the auto renewal for the premium subsidies. There won't be automatic renewal for consumers who did not authorize the marketplace to check their updated income tax information. That's not many consumers. Probably only about 100,000 didn't provide that authorization the last time they enrolled. And for those who did authorize the marketplace to check and whose most recent income tax return, which would be their 2013 income tax return, shows an income above five times the poverty level, those consumers also won't automatically have their premium tax credit renewed, but they can go in and apply to have their tax credit continued. And then there will be some other exceptions as well in a few states. In Maryland, for example, which is also changing its website, all consumers receiving premium tax credits will have to go in and reapply to have that subsidy continue on January 1st. Now, automatic renewal was adopted as the default to protect consumers so they wouldn't accidentally have a lapse in coverage or in their subsidies. But automatic renewal could produce some surprising results for consumers in some areas, especially if they live in an area where the benchmark plan is changing. Let's go back to our example in Denver. There, the benchmark plan is changing. In 2014, the second lowest cost silver plan was offered by Humana, and the unsubsidized rate for a 40-year-old was $250 a month, as we saw. When you subtracted, when you followed the formula for the premium tax credit, a 40-year-old earning $30,000 would receive a $41 credit, and so they would only pay $209 a month for that benchmark plan in 2014. In 2015, the unsubsidized premium for that Humana plan is actually going down by $1 to $249, but it will no longer be the second lowest cost silver plan. In 2015, that benchmark plan will be offered by a different insurer, Colorado Health Insurance, and the premium for that plan will be $211 a month. Once you plug the new benchmark plan premium into the formula and subtract the amount that this person is required to contribute, the result is a tax credit of only $3 a month. So if our sample consumer switches to the new second lowest cost silver plan, their net premium will go down by a dollar to $208 a month, less than they were paying in 2014. But if the person auto-renews their coverage in the same plan this year, the monthly payment will increase to $246 a month. Even though the premium for the plan is going down, their tax credit is going down by more. So that's an 18% increase over what they were paying this year. Now, this won't happen every year, everywhere, but it illustrates why it's a good idea for consumers to check in during open enrollment and update their application and make a deliberate choice about their coverage for 2015. Okay, well, enough math. Let's move on to something simpler like income taxes. The other new activity that will happen this time around relates to tax filing requirements under the Affordable Care Act. This year, 2014, was the first year that the individual responsibility requirement or the individual mandate took effect. Anybody who didn't have health insurance coverage for all 12 months in 2014 may owe a tax penalty for the months that they were uninsured. This requirement affects all of us, not just consumers who buy coverage through the marketplace. The penalty for 2014 for one adult is the greater of $95 or 1% of income above the tax filing threshold. The penalty is capped at the annual national average premium for a bronze-level health plan available through the marketplace. For 2014, that amount is $2,448 per individual or $204 per month. At the end of January this year, when people normally are getting their W-2s and their 1099s in the mail, all consumers should look out for a new form, the 1095B. Here it is on this slide. If you had health insurance in 2014, you should be getting a form 1095B from your health plan or insurer. If you didn't have coverage all year, you still may not owe a penalty because there are a number of exemptions available. For example, there's an exemption if coverage was unaffordable and the lowest cost plan option available to you cost more than 8% of your income. Or if you had just a brief lapse in coverage this year, there's an exemption for that. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that more than 80% of people who remain uninsured will qualify for one of these exemptions. But consumers who lacked coverage need to know about the exemptions and how to obtain them. Some you can claim right on the tax form when you file your 2014 return. For example, the exemption for a short lapse in coverage. However, some of the exemptions, such as hardship exemptions, can only be obtained if you apply to the marketplace. There's still time to apply if you had a gap in coverage this year. And if consumers have questions or need help, they should call their Marketplace call center or ask a navigator or other in-person assister. In addition to showing on your tax return that you had coverage, and that's all of us, people who got coverage through the Marketplace and who were eligible for tax credits will have a second tax-related activity. Those who received advanced premium tax credit, APTC, during 2014 should expect a second tax form to come in the mail by the end of January. That'll be Form 1095A, and that will come from the Marketplace. It will show the amount of APTC that was paid on a consumer's behalf to their health plan during the year, and this information will also be reported to the IRS. Now remember, the amount of APTC that the Marketplace said people were eligible for last year during open enrollment was based on their estimated 2014 income. When people file their 2014 income tax return, they'll know their actual 2014 income, and they'll need to reconcile on the return any differences between estimated and actual income. Consumers will use a new form when they file, shown here, Form 8962, to calculate that reconciliation. People who overestimated their income for this year and so took less APTC than they were eligible for can collect the difference as a tax refund when they file. And those who underestimated their income and so took more APTC than they were eligible for might have to repay some or all of the difference. There are caps on the amount of overpayment that consumers have to repay. Those caps increase with income, but once your income crosses four times the poverty level, you are required to repay the full amount of APTC that was paid on your behalf during the year. So that's what's changing for this next open enrollment. Many are now wondering how this will all work and how many people will enroll, and there's no way of knowing that today. Significant challenges definitely lie ahead. In particular, public understanding and awareness of the Affordable Care Act remains limited. Our tracking poll found that nearly 90% of the uninsured don't realize that open enrollment begins again this Saturday, and most uninsured are unaware that there is significant new financial help to help make coverage more affordable. So there will be challenges signing up additional uninsured people and connecting them to coverage. As for retaining coverage for folks newly insured this year, the significant challenge will be that this whole process is new. It's new for consumers, it's new for marketplaces and insurance companies and their staffs and their computer systems. New and returning consumers will likely need to rely on in-person assisters, as they did last year, and these navigators and assisters were very effective in many marketplaces in helping people navigate the enrollment system. This year, many of the assisters are returning. They're now more experienced and still very dedicated, so that's a reason for optimism. And, of course, federal and state agencies have invested efforts this year to improve their websites and application forms and call centers so that open enrollment will proceed even more smoothly this year. Just to recap, a couple of key dates to keep in mind. 15th, every time a 15th shows up on your calendar, something should be happening. November 15th, this Saturday, open enrollment begins. Again, it's good for consumers to get an early start and don't wait to the last minute. Because on December 15th, consumers who haven't yet acted, who are already enrolled, in most cases will automatically be re-enrolled in their current plan and their current tax credit amount for January 1st. If consumers forget and don't act by December 15th, they can still make changes through the end of open enrollment. February 15th, 2015 is that key date. And finally, April 15th is the deadline for filing our 2014 income tax return, and that's when all of us will have to indicate whether we had coverage this year. If not, we might owe a penalty. And this is when people who did receive premium tax credits for the Marketplace this year must reconcile their estimated tax credit amount with the actual income and what they were eligible for. And now I'll turn it back to Penny. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll turn it back to Cynthia.
Okay.
All right, so I am going to give a quick run-through of our updated calculator. Bear with us as a minute while we pull that up on the screen. So the first thing you may notice is that we have renamed this tool the Health Insurance Marketplace Calculator, which we think more accurately describes the breadth of what the tool can do. It was formerly known as the Subsidy Calculator. Now, the calculator has been updated with 2015 premiums in 48 states plus the District of Columbia. So this includes states that use healthcare.gov and states that run their own marketplaces. Massachusetts and Hawaii will be added as soon as those premiums are available. Now, you see the calculator on your screen just as it appears on our website. I'm going to give a quick example from my hometown of Dallas, Texas. Here you can see I've entered in a zip code in Texas, and I'm entering in an income of $30,000 per year for someone who does not have employer coverage, a household of two people, one adult who is 40 years old with one child. I'm going to hit submit and pull up the results. So here you can see that the amount of financial help this person would be eligible, or this family would be eligible for, is here. The amount that they would pay for a silver plan is here. This is the amount that they would pay for the second lowest cost silver plan available to them. This is the benchmark plan of which determines how much of a tax credit they're eligible for. Now, we also show how much the premium would have been for this family if it weren't for the tax credit that they're eligible for. Scrolling down, we have a few more results that just sort of help explain how this family is exactly affected by the coverage expansion and by other coverage options that might be available for them. So, for example, in Texas, children may be eligible for CHIP if they're under age 19. So we let the person know that their child may be eligible for that program. We also provide an example of how they can apply their tax credit towards other levels of coverage, for example, a bronze plan, which we provide the lowest cost bronze plan that would be available to this family, both in monthly and in yearly terms. And down below, we explain how their out-of-pocket costs are calculated. For this particular family, they would be eligible for a second type of assistance, which is called the cost-sharing subsidy. This reduces how much they are liable for if they have significant healthcare expenses. So you'll notice that it has a lower out-of-pocket maximum than normally would be the case for a family of this size. And down at the bottom, we also note when people would be eligible to purchase catastrophic coverage. So as you can see, these results are fully customized to this family in this zip code. We also provide some answers to frequently asked questions below. And up above, I just want to point out that you can embed this tool on your website. You can also, of course, link to it. But if you want to share this with your IT folks, they should be able to figure out pretty easily how to embed it on your site. All right, that's it. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We have covered a lot of ground. And I'm so sorry, a number of you had problems right at the outset of this presentation with the audio. We can go back over any of these slides and or answer related questions. So that's what we will do for the remainder of the web briefing. Keep sending in your questions via chat, and we will get to as many of them as we can. We are going, if you think it's relevant and you want to let us know which state you're in, or indeed which city, that always helps in case we might have something specific to tell you with that regard, but otherwise we will be taking questions as they come in. And the first one is from Stacy Singer at the Palm Beach Post, and she's asking how many folks signed up and then didn't pay their premiums. And Jen, I think you touched on that.
Yes. So there were, at the end of the open enrollment period, so as of April 19th, 2014, HHS reported that 8.01 million people had selected a qualified health plan.
Now, they all of those individuals had not actually paid that first month's premium. But we didn't get any additional information on the number of people who had paid their premium until August, at which point the number of people who were enrolled in coverage and paying premiums was 7.3 million, which then dropped a little bit further to 7.1 million in October. So the drop-off, I think, was to be expected. People have changes in circumstances throughout the years. People who had a job at the during or did not have a job or had a lower paying job at the beginning of the open enrollment period may have had a change in circumstance. They may have obtained a job that provided employer-sponsored coverage. So we would have expected some drop-off. But I think the drop-off was probably particularly large in this first open enrollment period, and we'll see what happens during the next year.
We have another question from Florida. This is from Metro Orlando. Abraham Oriah is saying in Metro Orlando, 20% of residents are at the poverty line. How much of the remaining market for health insurance is going to be for people who are lower income and therefore less likely to be able to afford insurance? This, of course, touches on the Medicaid gap, too. Do you want to pick up on that?
Let me see if I can. For people at right at 100% of poverty, they do qualify for premium tax credits and cost-sharing subsidies. And, in fact, the most comprehensive premium and cost-sharing subsidies occur right at the poverty level. So a single person would have to pay like $20 a month, less than $20 a month, for a plan that would have a silver plan that would have enhanced coverage. The cost-sharing subsidies essentially take a silver plan if your income is that level and plus it up so that it's even more generous than a platinum plan. So, you know, the deductibles would fall away, the copays would be reduced. So someone right at the poverty level would qualify. If their income's lower than that, though, they won't qualify for marketplace subsidies. And because Florida has not expanded Medicaid eligibility, those are the people who would fall in what we sometimes call the coverage gap. There are 4 or 5 million such people across the nation living in states with incomes below poverty where the state has not expanded.
Including Florida,
right. And I should note, we just posted yesterday an updated brief that lays out or provides updated estimates of the number of people who fall into the coverage gap across the states. So if you're interested in that number for Florida, it's available on our website.
Great. Thank you. Greg Grisolano is a shift towards looking at the results of the midterm elections. Is it reasonable to anticipate further modifications to the Affordable Care Act? And if so, what modifications might consumers want to prepare for now?
That's really hard to predict. I think there have been a number of discussions about modifications to the legislation, what those will be and whether they would be enacted as opposed to just proposed. I think we'll have to see. So I think right now consumers maybe want to just focus on what's right in front of them and see what their plan options are, what they need to do to continue coverage if they have it or to enroll in coverage if they don't.
We're now going to go back to looking at premiums. This is a question from Christopher Turndrup. Is there any indication as to why specific states have a bigger increase in premiums than other states?
Well, let me start on that, and then I'll have Cynthia correct me because she's my teacher. Going back to that bar chart, which I can't possibly do. I don't even know who's got the clicker. The big changes, I think, in – oh, I'm sorry. This is Karen, again, speaking. The keep going two more to the – three more to the right. One, two.
No,
other way. Yeah, the bar chart. The big premium changes, I think, that the unsubsidized premium changes, I think, are a reflection of two main things. One is competition in the marketplace. There, as I mentioned, there are new insurers that didn't participate in the first year that are coming into the marketplace, other insurers that tried to price their product and thought they were being competitive have maybe rethought that and are trying to lower their premiums in order to gain more market share and possibly that second lowest cost silver plan benchmark status. In other areas, I think we see increases. There was a lot of uncertainty in 2014. This was a new marketplace, new people coming in for coverage. And so insurers are adjusting their premiums in both directions to, you know, try to have a more accurate forecast of what their claims costs will be this year. So so you will see differences in premiums, and if you go to Cynthia's calculator, you'll be able to – you can also compare to 2014 and look up even in your own rating area and see what the differences are. If you want to advance two other slides. These changes in what the premiums that people will see based on after taking into account their tax credit – here, I think you see almost everywhere it's about a 1% decline, but in some areas it's a bigger increase or a bigger decrease, and these tend to be very low-cost areas. As Jen mentioned, Minneapolis offered the cheapest by far a benchmark plan in 2014, and while their rates are increasing for 2015, they're still going to be close to the cheapest in the whole country. So in some areas where the inexpensive benchmark plan was so affordable that the cap on what you have to pay didn't even kick in, those consumers can still kind of ride these premium differences up or down. So that's what's going on there.
There's a comment here from Rick Jurgens. I'm not sure if this is a correction or just an additional piece of information, that the number of insurers in the New Hampshire marketplace increased from one in 2014 to five in 2015.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. Four more entered.
That's just a correction, right?
Okay, sorry.
A clarification.
Thank you.
Clarification. Jim Landers asks, is all the information about how many companies are offering policies and what those policies are, is that information available just on the exchanges, or is CMS making that available outside the exchanges?
This is Cynthia. So we will be posting that information shortly. We've compiled the information for both marketplace plans that are on healthcare.gov and also through the state-based exchanges. So we'll be providing some updates on the number of insurers offering. Right now we have on our state health facts website some preliminary information about the number of insurers offering in each state and comparing that from 2014 to 2015. But now that the final rates have come out in almost every state, we'll be updating that table very soon.
Hilda Berner has a couple of questions. The first one is, how many insurers are leaving the marketplaces?
That information is also on State Health Facts. I think the average is like 0.3 insurers leaving the marketplace. So in a few that had a lot of insurers, like California, there may be two or three that are leaving. I can't do all 50 states from memory. It's zero for most states, but you are seeing an exodus in some states, and that's on our State Health Facts webpage. Just click on the health reform button and then look at the marketplace indicators.
And with another question from Heather, who writes for a provider audience, what changes should we expect from a provider perspective? What uncertainties do they need to be aware of? Or is there anything in particular that they should be watching out for?
This is Karen. I think providers need to be aware that the cost sharing that consumers face will be increasing under most plans this year. So I know that's always an issue for doctors if the claim for your particular service hits the deductible or hits a copay or coinsurance. So the cost sharing will be increasing for 2015. Again, that's why it's important for people with incomes at 2.5 times the poverty level or below to take a careful look at these special modified silver plans that offer reduced cost sharing for people with more modest incomes.
This is a question I think that goes back to the tax issues. Christopher Turndrup asking for clarification. What is considered, quote, a brief lapse in coverage?
A brief lapse in coverage is considered less than 3 months. That's the rule. However, for 2014, because open enrollment extended so far into the year, anyone who was uninsured during, even if they were uninsured for all of the first open enrollment period, that will also qualify as a short coverage lapse. So if you waited until the end of March and so your coverage didn't take effect until May 1st, those first 4 months of the year would still not be counted as being subject to a penalty. Otherwise, it's 3 months and it has to be 3 consecutive months. So if you have a brief lapse of 2 months at the beginning of the year and then you get covered and then you lose it again for a third month, that last month is subject to a penalty. It's only your first brief coverage lapse during the year that gets exempted.
This is perhaps hard to answer, but Steve Jordan is asking, are there any contingencies to extend the open enrollment period if problems arise? Of course, that did happen last time.
This is Karen. I've not heard any specific discussions about that. As you point out, it did happen last year, so
yeah,
we'll have to see.
Kelsey Dallas, here's another crystal ball. How does the Kaiser Foundation predict the King versus Burwell case might impact this open enrollment period?
I don't believe we have made such a prediction. Oh, this open enrollment period? I stand by my first answer. I think whatever happens, the decision won't be until after open enrollment has ended. So just mind what's in front of you, and that'll keep most people busy.
Okay. Now back into premiums. Carolyn Bigder is asking, is there any sense of how much the average premium will rise or fall for young individuals, the 20 to 30-year-old something?
So we haven't done these projections yet. We're going to be, again, putting out some more detailed analyses. We have put up a table, as Jen and Karen have walked you through, that shows the premium changes for a 40-year-old. This information could easily be recreated for a young adult in your area by using our subsidy calculator, but we'll be putting out some more detailed analyses now that we have this data.
Karen, you mentioned our recent survey findings, and I guess this is a follow-up question from Dion Rabuin. Why do 9 out of 10 people not know that open enrollment begins Saturday? I mean, did we have any further clarification on or any explanation behind that?
Well, I think it's an unfortunate continuation of a trend that's been going on for quite a while now. Our tracking poll data has shown for many years that people really aren't that familiar with what's in the ACA, whether it will help them, what the rules and the dates are. So this is still new. People may, even if they heard about open enrollment last year, they may not realize that it comes around every year toward the end of the year. It's hard to say why it is, but I think there are a number of barriers that in-person assisters and marketplaces will be trying to overcome to do more targeted outreach, to try to find populations who maybe aren't as connected to the internet, who maybe don't speak English as their primary language, who may have other literacy barriers or other access barriers. It's hard to get out really try to bring this information and this assistance to them directly to try to get them signed up.
And of course, as clarification, that survey finding was people who are currently, 9 out of 10 who are currently uninsured.
Correct.
I don't know what the broader population might be. Perhaps it's equally quite news to them as well. That's why you're all on this call and going to be doing such a great job to spread the word. But in a sort of related question from Nicholas Nahamas at the Miami Herald, you know, given this relatively low level of awareness among the uninsured, is HHS doing radio billboard buys in key markets like Florida?
I actually don't know what the I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry, we don't know what they're doing in terms of broad-based advertising. This is Jen. One thing I can say, though, is that in talking with assisters across the country, and we did speak with a group of assisters in Miami specifically, and what they told us is they learned from the first open enrollment period the importance of conducting outreach early. And so they had planned to begin reaching out to potential populations early in the process, much earlier than they did last year, and doing much more targeted outreach for this open enrollment period. So while, you know, it's uncertain what types of media and ads will be happening, particularly in states with the federal marketplace, at least the assisters will be out there early trying to get the word out and educate consumers.
And Jen, this is a question for you. You touched on this earlier, really, from Jay McDonald, asking about Medicaid expansion, which does continue under the ACA. What are the latest figures on the number of states that have expanded Medicaid, and how many states are in the process of potentially expanding, and roughly how many consumers might acquire Medicaid coverage in 2015?
This is the map that shows, you can see here that 16 states, including D.C., with state-based marketplaces have implemented the Medicaid expansion, and additional 12 states with the federally facilitated marketplace or running partnership marketplaces have also expanded Medicaid, which leaves 23 states that have not yet expanded. As I mentioned, Pennsylvania was the most recent state to decide to implement the expansion, with coverage slated to begin January 1st. A handful of other states are still openly debating the issue, particularly Utah and Indiana. But, you know, we will continue to monitor this across all states, and we'll see what happens over the coming year.
Brian Lyman from Alabama comments on the fact that Alabama had the least competitive health insurance marketplace a few years ago, but now we'll have two insurers competing throughout the state this year, and asks, has there been any early indication of the effects of that on rates?
Yeah, so this is Cynthia. The question is very on point. So Alabama did have the least competitive health insurance market before the ACA went into effect. And now with the marketplace in 2015, there will actually be, I think, three insurers participating in the state as a whole, and two of which will be offering in, I think, every county in the state. One of those is United Health, which now is going to be offering the lowest cost silver plans in most of the state. And so that is an example where you have a new entrant coming in to the market offering competitive rates. And this is something we've seen across the country in many other states as well. And I guess while I'm on this point, I just want to clarify a couple of things one thing that I said before about young adults premiums. You can actually use the same table that we had presented before to look at the percent change for young adults. It's actually going to be the same percent change for other ages as well, but the dollar amount change in premiums is something you would have to recreate by using our subsidy calculator or healthcare.gov. We will have our 2014 calculator reposted to a different website so that you can do 2014 to 2015 comparisons in your area very easily, and that should be up in the next couple of days.
Great. Thank you. Kim Mulford asks, can you compare premiums offered on the marketplace to similar plans offered outside the marketplace? Are prices higher outside the marketplace, obviously not accounting for tax credits?
So we tried actually to compile off-exchange or outside of the marketplace premiums, but this information isn't presented in a standardized as a form as the on-marketplace plans. So generally speaking, when an insurer offers the same plan both on and off of the exchange, the premium is going to be very comparable, but there might be other plans that are offered off-exchange that we just don't have access to. So we aren't able to really provide an analysis of the off-exchange market.
And actually, I had a question on that. You mentioned that we don't have Massachusetts and Hawaii in there yet. Any idea of when that might be available?
We will be able to get Massachusetts and Hawaii premiums by the 15th when they will post their plan finders, presumably.
That would
we'll
be good.
That
would be helpful, right? We have one more question. We're coming towards the end here, so we're just going to rattle through a few more questions, and then we can answer any subsequent questions offline afterwards. This is a follow-up from Greg Grisolano about the Supreme Court arguments, given his readership, which includes a lot of people who are concerned about the ACA and are confused about what the court's decision to hear the case might actually mean. So I'm not sure that I can go through the entire question here, but I think it's just, again, should this be something that they bear in mind as they're making decisions and what impact it might have on their taxes?
Yeah, so, the court case has to do with whether the law is written in such a way that tax credit subsidies are only available in states where the state operates the marketplace. In the first year, in 2014, the tax credits were available in every state. In 2015, they're available in every state. I suppose something could change in the future, but for now, the tax credits are available no matter where you live. The obligation to have coverage applies no matter where you live, and so people are going to have to pay attention when they file their 2014 taxes to make sure that they're square with all of that and keep that in mind as they're signing up for coverage for 2015.
And here are a couple of questions from Martha Coombs still on these tax issues. How big a problem do you think confusions over rebasing of tax credits might be, i.e. the confusion over re-enrollment and the new basis for the benchmark plans?
This is Karen. This is new, and I've learned from last year not to make predictions about things that haven't happened yet. So it's a new system. The marketplaces are getting used to it. The insurance companies are getting used to it. Consumers, assisters, we're all going to have to kind of, go down this learning curve, I think, for the first time and see how it works. But the simple message for people is that if you don't do anything, you will, in most cases, continue at steady state, but it is a good idea. because there are changes that you can recognize and foresee, and there are changes that you may not be able to recognize that all could affect what your coverage ends up costing in 2015. So it really is a good idea to take this first month of open enrollment, go onto your Marketplace website, see what the plans are, update your application, and then see what the new plans will cost with your new premium tax credit amount, and then make your decision about how to continue from there. That really is the thing to do.
The last question we're going to get to today is from Bernard Wilson at the Orange County Register. Do you see evidence of improvement for 2015 in access to providers and information about who is in the various networks, given the chaos and dislocation that was such a significant problem in the first enrollment period?
This is Karen. I think we haven't really seen any information yet on the plan networks. And it was hard to see information in the first year and to evaluate it. So suffice it to say there definitely were some new, narrower network products that were being offered. I think overall about half the plans, right, Cynthia, that were offered in the federal marketplace were HMO plans, so they were closed network plans. So the breadth of the network really mattered there because you didn't get any coverage if you went out of network unless it was for emergency care. So that's something that I think a lot of people will be watching in 2015. It still is difficult, though, other than kind of reading through the directories line by line and counting cardiologists. It still is, I think, a difficult thing to evaluate. I know one state in 2014 did offer a provider search tool for their marketplace residents so that you could actually enter your doctor or your hospital and then see all the plans, at least at that time, that included that provider in their network. And I think other marketplaces are hoping to develop those kinds of information and search tools for consumers as soon as they can.
Well, thank you. We've covered a lot today, and this briefing and the PowerPoint slides will be posted at the latest by tomorrow morning. And also, Cynthia mentioned the Health Insurance Marketplace Calculator, which will be available, and a number of other related materials. We're certainly available here to pick up any further questions that came up today or didn't. And you may or may not know that we have a number of related resources which are listed here. There's a very neat U-Tunes video, if you haven't taken a look at it, to give you a refresher course on health insurance, and a quiz, FAQs, and all these things are available for free. So thank you for joining us today, and we look forward to working with you as you keep everyone informed about what's going to happen on all these dates beginning with a 15. Thank you.
Ladies and